Welcome to OpenHive.js, our podcast on all things JavaScript with Nearform guests. I'm Matteo Collina, and I'm joined today by our guest, Danielle Adams, to discuss releasing Node.js, Heroku, Buildpacks, and a lot of other cool stuff.
You run a Heroku dyno. It uses Buildpacks, which is just a set of scripts that you can run that is specific to a language or a framework or to a library that will set it up for you. And it's kind of a standardized set of scripts that everyone can use, so it's composable.
Let's get into it. This is OpenHive.js from Nearform. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you.
For all of you, Danielle has been pushing out a lot of the latest release of Node.js. Most of it, probably V15 branch, has been released by you or something?
Yes. So, hi, my name's Danielle. I'm a software engineer in New York City. I work at Heroku. I am the Node.js language owner there, which means that I work on the developer experience and making sure that everybody's Node.js applications and builds are running efficiently on Heroku. I'm also on the Node.js release team. So that means that I'm pushing out releases every couple weeks. Right now it's on the current releases, which is the releases that get all of the new cool features. And yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Well, for all of you, you know, I met Danielle back in 2019 in Canada, in Montreal, at the latest OpenJS War that we did in person. It seems, I don't know, ages ago. So I'm very happy that, you know, she recently joined as a releaser. She's done a really good job on the Node team. So you joined the Node.js team straight into as a releaser, the Node.js collaborator groups, whatever, straight as a releaser. What was, first of all, let's start with, what does a releaser do?
So there's different types of releasers. Well, there's people that focus on different things. We have people that perform a lot of backports into the LTS versions. Some people might know there are different stages of node versions that are supported. So you have a maintenance version, the active LTS version, and then you have, which there might be actually one or two versions, and then you have the current version. And so the releasers are responsible for backporting PRs that go into master, making sure that they land into those Node.js versions, making sure that they don't break anything, any current functionality, that all the tests pass, and then they release those versions as you know that they're being released. So we have, you know, versions of 10 that go out right now and versions of 15. And so those are released by different people who kind of understand how code changes will impact those different versions.
Wow. We have a lot of active lines in Node.js. Let's recap them a little bit. So we have 10, 12, 14, and 15.
Yes.
doesn't this confuse people?
Yeah, I feel like it does a little bit, but it's broken out so that it supports the most amount of people, but also doesn't break people's applications. It also has this many versions so that it stays up to date with the releases that V8 does, because Node is built on top of V8. It seems like an aggressive release cycle, but it's actually, you know, to make sure that everyone's getting features that they need.
For all of you that you're listening, the Node 10, that is, if you're still using Node 10, you should stop using Node 10 now and migrate.
Yes.
To what? You should migrate to V14.
Yes.
V14 is LTS and it has a few years of life still. Life meaning we will be issuing security releases and security updates when something bad happens. This is the current case for 10 and 12. So for 10 and 12, you will only get new releases when there is a security issue. Now, we had one at the beginning of January, like the 4th or 5th of January, which was a total nightmare to prepare. So I'm sorry for all of you who have been involved and or impacted straight after vacation. Hey, here is a Node core release to update all your servers. Pretty critical as well. So happy days. You joined as a releaser not so long ago. When did you start getting involved with Node core?
So I started kind of attending, what were they? I guess they were meetings or kind of mentorship meetings maybe a year ago. So every 2 weeks on, for me, it was Tuesday mornings, I was attending like a releaser's mentoring session. And so watching like Miles and Beth, who are on the release team too, and watching them put together releases, because the releases usually go down on Tuesdays. And so they were, that was for about 6 months, is every 2 weeks, just kind of getting familiar with the process. And then after that, I became a collaborator. And then also became more active in the working group. So going to the release meetings, which happen every other Thursday. And so depending on what time zone you're in, it could be any time. So after being a collaborator and a part of the working group for a couple months, then I was able to start preparing my own releases. And so when you first join the release team, you have to prepare a release with someone helping you from the current release team. So I think Beth and I created a release for version 14. And at the time it was the current version. And then after that, I was able to start making releases. So I would say probably maybe in the past 6 months. So I think August or September, I started just doing them by myself. And now since then, I've been doing them once or twice per month.
Wow. You know, congrats. Yeah, you know, you've been doing such a good job.
Thank you.
You know, it seems it's a lot of work when people to assemble a node release. A lot of people might wonder, well, what does it take? Like, you know, for a lot of people it's actually very simple. It looks simple on the tin to some people. Like, what it is, it's just a downloaded executable. What did it take to put an executable on a website, right? That's what a lot of people would think. But it's a little bit more complex than that, right?
Yes, there's a lot of work that goes into it. First, there is, well, we have the, I think I mentioned this before, but we have people that run through and they backport PRs that go into master into all of those release lines. And so that's like not even a part that I do mostly. When I get to my release week, that part is done by a lot of people that are already performing backports. And so when I start, I usually have maybe anywhere from like, could be 2 to maybe 10 pull requests that need to be backported into the version 15 release. And so first I start doing that and making sure that we have like a staging branch on the Node.js project. And so each version gets a staging branch, and that's where all of those commits on master go backwards into those release lines. And so we start on staging, and then so I'll usually pull in pull requests. You have to review them, because anyone that's backporting things, making sure, did the test pass? Did at least a few Node.js collaborators approve the pull request? And making sure the commit message is correct. Is the date correct? Is it formatted correctly? There's a lot of things that go into that. So that's like a whole job in itself. And then you have to backport those. And once those are in, then the release process starts. So you prepare all of the commits. You're supposed to go through them and make sure that, again, like make sure nothing went in that wasn't supposed to go in. So for instance, if I'm working on something that was, or if I have a commit that was supposed to be for the next Semver major. So for instance, if something accidentally went into the V15 staging branch that it was supposed to hold off for version 16, I have to take that out and, or, you know, flag and say, hey, this shouldn't be in here. So making sure that all of those commits are ready to go. And again, no typos, everything's formatted correctly. There's a link to the pull request so that, you know, if there is a bug that can be tracked easily. You have to prepare the release, open a pull request on Node. That's like a whole process too, because you have to prepare the change log, and then comes testing. So the next phase of that after you prepare it is all of the tests and waiting for people to approve it. And so there's tests that we run locally to make sure that it builds and the tests run on like a local device. And then we also have infrastructure that the Node.js build team has kept up for us, and they do a great job of keeping our Jenkins pipelines set up. And so there's a bunch of tests that you have to run, the Node.js tests, the V8 tests. There's also SitGym, which is an acronym for Canary in the Gold Mine. And so this is an entire suite of tests that we also run to make sure that, you know, when we do run Node.js, or when we do make a release, that we don't break the entire JavaScript ecosystem. So, you know, some people that are using Node.js as a server, they might not even realize that there are so many people in the JavaScript community that are also using Node.js for their build pipelines. And so making sure that Node is compatible with the ecosystem is really important. So we run tests across that are all the CI tests, different platforms too. That's making sure that Node can be run on different operating systems and whatnot. And then after all those tests are passed, so usually that takes a couple days, 24 hours, you're supposed to let it, the pull request also sit for about 24 hours, let it test run, let the other releasers look at the pull request, make sure that everything looks good. And then you start the release process. So that requires running the build on like another CI system where the Node.js binary is compiled and we package in NPM and NPX. And then after that's prepared, you have to download it and run tests on it. You know, just usually I open the Node.js console and just run, write some code or, you know, just like run Node with some command line flags and all of that. And then after that, it's an exhaustive list of things. It's also written down somewhere, so I don't just keep this all in mind. It's written somewhere.
I hope so. Okay, I truly hope so. That is not just on your mind and Beth's mind and Miles' mind.
Yeah.
If when these go live, the links will be there in the info box so that people can actually, this is actually things that exist. This is still documented.
Yeah.
Then another important bit to note that despite all these tests, we still make mistakes.
Yes.
It very recently happened that we shipped a change to Node.js HTTP implementation that truly is not used by anybody and that essentially broke the happy framework in V15. And we were so sorry about it. but from time to time, those things happen. Okay. So a change that was supposed to be fine and not breaking was actually breaking somebody. The reason is we don't run all the tests for all the modules inside Canary in the Goldmine. Canary in the Goldmine is this amazing tool that actually runs tests for a lot of very popular libraries so that we can actually verify that can still work in the new release. So unfortunately, Happy was not listed in there, and we have been working on adding Happy since then so that we don't break Happy anymore. But we don't break, you know, if there is something that should be in Canary in the Goldmine that you find a regression, please open an issue in Canary in the Goldmine so we can actually run our tests against that module as well. So that was kind of a very nice thing. So after all of this is said and done, you sign the binaries and then upload them somewhere? How does it work?
Yes. We sign them with our GPG keys and then we release them. But there's some command line magic that I honestly can't remember.
You copy and paste it all the time, right? That's what great engineers do. They copy and paste things to have the time or automate them and then it disappears.
Yes. So automating them so I don't have to think about it.
Yay. Happy days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is. Cool. So you said you work at Heroku and you are implementing the Node.js. You lead the Node.js platform there. What do you do? What are you responsible for?
Yeah, so I have a few responsibilities. It's mostly the maintenance and managing the Node.js build packs. So people that are familiar with Heroku's infrastructure, they know that Heroku is, you run a Heroku dyno, it uses build packs, which is just a set of scripts that you can run that is specific to a language or a framework or to a library that will set it up for you. And it's kind of a standardized set of scripts that everyone can use. So it's composable. I'm responsible for the Node.js build pack. And so Heroku has build packs for all of its supported languages, Go, Python, Ruby, PHP, and Java. And then Java has a couple flavors. I think there's like Clojure and Scala and something else that I can't remember. But yeah, and so I'm responsible for that build pack. And so that just means that I have to kind of understand how different developers are, well, most JavaScript developers are using Heroku and making sure that their build and runtime environments are up to the needs that they are, that that meets their requirements.
Wow. So, build packs. Like, I have been once upon a time back in maybe, it's currently listed at 8 years ago. So 8 years ago, I wrote a build pack for Image Magic.
And oh, okay.
Long years ago, like long time ago. It would only run inside the Rocco Cedar, which is the old ancient version of their stack and stuff, something like that.
Yeah. We just deprecated Cedar.
You see? I'm very happy. It's whatever. It's long time back. So it's actually a very fascinating technology. Like, I didn't use much of Heroku in the last few years. So I don't know, maybe there is something new since then.
Yeah, so most recently, the languages team on Heroku that's responsible for all of the language build packs, we are working on OCI compliant images. And so OCI stands for Open Container Initiative. And so that means that the build packs that we're using are actually, you can run them in a Docker container. And so we are involved in a project called Cloud Native Build Packs. And so, as you know, I'm sure people know what Cloud Native is, but if you don't, Cloud Native is anything that is kind of like bundles into the open standard that has become like this Kubernetes ecosystem, which includes Docker and is kind of has to do with the CNCF. So the Cloud Native Cloud Foundry. And so, yeah, so Heroku is really involved in this project, and we're really excited because right now build packs are kind of a proprietary, something that is only used at Heroku. And so people that are coming into the project, and you know, these are, the build packs are open source projects. And so if someone wants to contribute, they have to, there isn't like a good way to, you know, Heroku is the only place that these build packs are built like that. But it, once we move to an open standard of build packs, then we can, you know, it'll be easier for people to contribute and people to understand the infrastructure. And, you know, containerization is really kind of the way forward in a lot of infrastructure. And so we want to make sure that build packs are keeping up with that technology. And plus it's not a replacement for a Docker file, but it does meet a needs for people that don't really, the same way that, you know, Heroku is a non-configurable way to, you know, you use your build packs and you can deploy your applications and there isn't, you know, there's minimal configuration. And so we want build packs to be the same thing, but for Docker containers. So I've been working on I've been working on a set of build packs that are part of the Node.js ecosystem. And so for Node, for NPM, for Yarn, and then also for TypeScript to make it a better developer experience.
Wow. It's like I loved when I was deploying on Heroku. I loved the concept. However, I was missing it deeply when we started using containers essentially, and in the Docker world, because you could get you could compose things as much as you needed them, without not having to recompile things, rebuild things. It was really, really handy to some extent. Like from my point of view, it was certain things were actually simpler back then than with containers, because despite creating it was a little bit awkward and complex, but once you created the ones for Image Magic, for example, then you could actually install it and the binaries was already there. So you did not have to do, as your user, you don't have to do anything. Uh-huh. If with Docker, if you needed to add, I don't know, a package that was a different package or something in your Docker image, then you need to maybe either do an apt-get install or something, or a yum install, or even compile it from scratch, because in some cases the software that you needed was not even available on the main package registry, but it was just something that you needed to download and compile from scratch. So it's like, for me, that was a fantastic feature. So I'm really glad I didn't know this existed. So I learned something new today. I'm very happy.
Yeah, we're really excited about it because I think it brings kind of the Heroku ethos, you know, not really involving kind of the configuration logic in your application source code. And so it really brings that into the Docker ecosystem.
Amazing. Are they hard to prepare and build, or is just very simple?
I would say no, because if you're familiar enough with Docker and you also have, if you've built a build pack for Heroku before or for another platform, Heroku's not the only platform that uses build packs. The concept is it's pretty straightforward because you have, you have your layers. There's a lot of tools that go around the build pack. So there are some projects that are built to make it so that the build pack is... there isn't like any configuration as a build pack author. So the project, the team that's running the project has done a very good job of kind of abstracting out a lot of the logic. Okay, well, this is the Cloud Native Build Packs platform. And this is the concerns that only build pack authors are going to look at. And people that are app developers, like this is all that they need to know. And so it all kind of fits together really nicely. And so for me as a build pack author, I don't really have to think about, okay, well, what do I do after I make my build pack? Because there's tooling around the platform to handle that. So like, for instance, there's a CLI called Pack, and that will, if you're running a build pack locally or if you're developing locally, you can just use Pack and that will package up your build pack with your source code and create a Docker image. Then you can run it or push it up to, you know, Docker Hub or any sort of image registry.
Wow. It's very, I don't know. I really like the concept. So I'm staggered that there was some so many things that I was not aware of. So it's pretty nice. So just a few last bit of questions before we leave our guests. You have been attending a little bit our live events, and then everything stopped. You missing them? Are you adjusting very well with this new web first way of getting in touch with the community?
I do miss in-person events. There is, at least for me, everyone's different. I think that there is a kick of motivation that I get after a conference or after kind of being able to see people in person, even if it is just the people I've worked with, because I worked remote before the pandemic. Heroku's a pretty much remote company. And so I was used to having to work with people online, but zero human interaction is, for me, it's taking its toll. I wouldn't say I'm like to do everything in person, but I definitely am missing kind of some of that motivation and inspiration I get from, you know, seeing people's talks or getting to talk with people in person and getting to work together in person. And that's really valuable. Like that's how I got involved with Node.js in the beginning, was because I just kind of, or in the releasers team, because I just kind of wandered into a working group meeting and, you know, that was open to people that weren't necessarily part of that team. And so I was interested in the releasers and I was able to attend in person at first. So hopefully, I've adjusted, but I'm hoping that we can do some in person.
Yay,
thanks, Dan.
I can't hope to be back at OpenJS World, to be honest, so that we can all meet each other. All the community, let's bring all the community together. Like I'm really missing human-to-human interaction with the rest of the community as well. So it's really cool. Thank you, Danielle, for being with us today. And it was such a big pleasure to have you here. It's nice when we can interview somebody that has been, you know, just joined the Node community and so on. So I can't wait to see what more can you do for everybody. So, and I'm really, really looking forward to the future.
Great. Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. This has been another episode of OpenHive.js, the podcast for all things JavaScript from Nearform. Be sure to subscribe to OpenHive.js on your favorite podcast player. Join us next time for more insights and opinions from the open source and JavaScript communities. Until then, I'm Matteo Collina. Thanks for listening.